Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now. Well, hello, brains, and welcome back to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed. Where's my pointer right here? I can tell you where it is. It's pointed. The guests are sharp and the responses are never dull. From Australia, we have Dr. Karen Miller. And me and Dr. Miller, we're talking about having a PhD. Here in the United States, you know, I have friends that have PhDs and they don't even put that on their resume because they get this snarkiness of you're overqualified. If you are unemployed, how are you overqualified? But Dr. Miller is an expert. She has studied employment, business, branding, marketing, all of these great techniques. She has a program, and it is her design is innovation management. We're going to ask her what that means. But Dr. Miller, and I'm going to call you Karen. Is it okay if I call you Karen during the interview?
Everyone calls me Karen.
Okay. But Dr. Miller, do you have that same kerfuffle there in Australia with your PhD and, you know, your credentials?
I think you find that can happen anywhere with a PhD, but because not a lot of people understand that when you study a PhD, you're an expert in a tiny little thing. And that doesn't mean you're an expert in everything. It just means that you're an expert that you've studied extensively in one particular area. So in my case, it was strategic brand management and business growth.
Well, you are so heady. Again, you have the PhD in business. You were a professor at the university. You really help people lead teams, design thinking, leading growth, watching that growth. They don't do it. They, you know, people just think, oh, it's just a straight trajectory. No, you've got to edit, filter. You've got to go back. You've got to adjust it. You got to move from side to side, bring in new people, new ideas. Always stay on the cutting edge of what your clients' needs are. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about your online course. And also, you are the founder of Leading Growth, and you are a is it Leading Growth, or is it you're a founder of the Founders Institute? You're a member of Founders Institute.
So I'm the Adelaide, one of the Adelaide directors of the Founder Institute, which is a global organization that helps founders at a pre-seed stage to get ready to basically scale up.
So what do you mean? You mean the founders of an organization from a grassroots perspective? Okay.
Yeah. So there's a belief with the Founders Institute that to really get on with the sustainable goals of the United Nations, that it's the small businesses that are going to be the ones that are going to be the change makers. They're the doers. They're the ones that are going to make a difference. Oh. And so the Founders Institute was developed in America, and it's a global organization in 180 places, and it's got over, I can't remember, I think it's like over 50,000 mentors across the globe, helping businesses right across the globe at the pre-seed stage get ready to get out there and make a difference. So I'm one of five directors or leaders here in Adelaide in Australia, and we look after South Australia and the Northern Territory.
Well, you are pretty smart, because we need innovators. Now, excuse me. When we talk about that, we're talking about, too, you know, they're looking at their venture capitalists, who's going to maybe be their investors, if there's going to be an opportunity to have, you know, IP, you know, initial offerings when they go global. What kind of industries do you focus on? Is it technology, sustainability, you know, women's issues, food, water? What are your portfolios look like?
Basically, it's a range of issues. So we follow the, you know, the 17 United Nations Sustainable Goals. So I'm probably the most interested in things to do with women, things to do with reducing poverty, anything to do with education, sustainability, the circular economy, things like that are probably the things that drive me. Tech is obviously, to me, tech is a vehicle that takes us, you know, to many, many people. So to me, tech is a vehicle. I'm not specifically interested in tech. To me, it's just a way of connecting people.
I get it. I was talking to my financial planner, and she got me involved in a fund. And in that fund, it is all socially conscious, sustainable portfolios. And I was like, well, wow, this is pretty cool. And I said, well, who invests in this? She said, millionaires and millennials, because that's what they're looking at. They're not looking at companies that maybe are fracking, or companies that are not providing women equal rights, or they're oppressive to other individuals. So people are really socially being very conscious where they put their money and who they support and who they invest in. And I think that that is fantastic. So when you find these companies to work with, what is a little bit of the vetting process? What are you looking for to really help them scale up?
Okay, so if we're talking about the founders, or we're talking about leading growth?
Because let's talk about leading growth, and then we can go back.
Okay. So with leading growth, again, I guess it's a similar scenario. So with leading growth, predominantly a lot of the people that I help have been in the agribusiness space. So they might be farmers, you know, predominantly beef farmers. They've been winemakers or wine producers, seafood industry, goats, those kinds of things. We've also starting to help engineers and some government officials or businesses. So a lot of what we're doing is actually helping businesses look at what does 2030 look like. And I know that sounds really crazy in the middle of the pandemic, or hopefully we're at the latter end of that pandemic. But what's happened is, I think now people are going, well, we're all living in this age of uncertainty at the moment. We're not really sure what's happening. But the one thing I think what has happened is everybody realizes there's a huge need for innovation. So we're seeing a lot of organizations start to employ innovation managers and innovation teams, where once upon a time, pre-pandemic, there were only a few organizations doing this. And often innovation was the role of the marketer or the CXO or the CIO or the CTO. But now organizations are actually having innovation management teams and looking at, well, what does 2030 look like, or what does 2050 look like?
Wow. And then, you know, you've got AI, artificial intelligence, taking over the planet. Yeah. I went over to my girlfriend's house. I got one of those cotton picking refrigerators to talk to you. Oh, you know. Sharon, we need milk. I was like, what? Next thing is going to, all you're going to do is punch in something and it's going to say, you know, order it, have it delivered. It's crazy. Robotics are so important now. And so what we're going to have to learn how to do is to work in sync with them, in parallel, because people are afraid of artificial intelligence. They're afraid it's going to take over, and the innovation is progressive, so much so that business people are going to have to look at that. Where do you see that possibly going?
I'm actually, AI is still very much in its infancy stage, and I love AI, to be honest. And What to me, what AI isn't, because it's still in its infancy stage, and yes, it's set to really skyrocket, but the issue is it still can't produce things like imagination and creativity. Right. And I think human connection, and there are very human values that we all have. And I think it's about us embracing our human values and really starting to remember how to connect with people on a real level, on an authentic level, not on this surface, let's pretend we like each other, but we really don't level.
Right, right.
Let's really engage with each other in an authentic way. Let's get real and let's turn around and really find our creative genius that we all had when we were children, and we've sort of lost it as adults. And that's what we're helping a lot of businesses and teams and leaders do at the moment, is have the conversations, help with creativity, help with authenticity, and really help them to engage in imagination and really stretch that imagination muscle. And that's where the legs are.
Well, and, you know, and also valuing your team members.
Yes.
And really encouraging and supporting their input and rewarding and recognizing that, because you cannot do it alone.
Oh, for sure. And it's more than that. It's really raising each other up. Like, I personally believe that real leaders grow leaders.
Okay.
So you want your people to be better than you. You Absolutely. Want to raise people up. And you're not afraid of them. You're not scared of them.
Right.
You want to cheer them when they do really, really well. And I want to see more of that. And that's where I want to see a world where we're not afraid of somebody else. Instead, we want to raise them up. We want to cheer people on. We want to get excited when they do well. And it's okay that we want to live in an abundant world.
And you don't have to feel intimidated. I know one of my mentors told me a long time ago, he goes, April, I want you to be the bridge that carries other people safely across.
Yeah,
and that's beautiful. I thought that was so beautiful. And
yeah, that's beautiful.
He says, I want you to outgrow me.
Yeah.
I don't want you to stay stuck with the same coach for 5 years. I want you to take a chance. I want you to be a risk taker. I want you to accept responsibility, go for the challenges. Where do you see women in this? Because now, you know, I don't know if everybody got the email, Karen, but I did. We are taking back over the planet, girlfriend. Oh, yes, we are doing it big time. And where do you see women's roles in here?
I really, really think we've still got a long way to go. I unfortunately had a recent encounter with a woman across the weekend, for a little while now, and her personal view of herself, of her own self-worth and her value, is that she helps men. And I felt incredibly sad for her, and I tried to talk about, well, and tease out what values do you personally have? Let's just talk about you and your own self-worth. And she couldn't find her self-worth. She described herself in terms of the men that she helps. And I really felt so sad for her, because I thought to myself, we really have to raise women up. So this woman is terrified of other women.
Mm.
And I thought, my God, we've still got such a long way to go, because women should be raising other women. We still, unfortunately, live in a patriarchal society, and we're starting to see a lot of change. Like, I look at my son's generation, and my son's generation, I'm so proud of that generation. Like, he's 25, and that particular generation, they see women as their peers. They don't see women as something below them. They don't see them as a helper. They see them as their peers, and that's a society, and it gives me great comfort to, I guess, know that the world is in great hands, that we're going to eventually see a society where gender doesn't matter, that it's based on the person and what they have to give, not on the gender that they were born with.
It's a little bit more than that, too. You know, we're going to take it there, because I have been in corporate America, and I'll tell it a million times, I have been torn up, chewed up, spit out, and pushed up on by more women than men. And it seems like women, you know, not all. I've had some great women mentors, okay? But women want to take on their male masculine energy instead of bringing in the female energy.
I agree.
The negotiation skills, the balance, the patience, the conversation, the listening, the negotiation, all of that is very strong. And as you said, and I find it very disheartening, women do not close the deal. They do not make the ask. They are not competitive. Oh, they're going to be co-signed or validated by somebody else.
I disagree with that. Like, I'm certainly not afraid to close a deal or have the ask.
That's me and you. But overall, I've
had a lot of great, I guess, male mentors that have helped with that space. But I think it's about, and I think I'd like to see a world where we don't generalize as much. And I try to stop doing it myself about someone on the basis of gender. And yes, I've been, you know, we've had, I guess I've experienced myself women that try to act like men. And we know that, you know, and again, trying, I don't really like to generalize, but there are men tend to be more competitive and think that that's the way that you have to be. Whereas women, I don't think we need to be meek and mild. And I think that was once the case when we were considered to be assistants. But I think with women, we bring other things to the table. We bring empathy. We bring understanding. We bring relationship building. We bring to the table, let's get it done. We're quite practical. And we get it done because we're so used to multitasking that we've had to do it all our lives. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, again, I'm generalizing, don't really like to. But I think we have a lot of value that we bring to the table. And, you know, so do men. But I think it's about trying to bring a new world to the table where I think with an abundance attitude, there's enough for everyone that, you know, I see businesses that have that competitive nature where they're so focused on their competition that they forget to focus on their customers.
Exactly.
And they should be focused on their customers and what's going on in their customers and empathizing with their customers and understanding their customers and looking at what are their customers asking for and what are their customers' needs and wants. And so many businesses, unfortunately, I see are like, let's do a competitor analysis. We need to work out where our gaps are. And I'm like, yeah, that was kind of the 1980s. And while I don't disagree with competitor analysis, I think a much better approach is to do a stakeholder analysis where we take into account the whole landscape, where you take a much more holistic, people-centered approach, where we treat people as people, and we look at what we have to give and what we have to value to our customers and where does that sit in the landscape.
Well, you know, let's dial back a little bit too. And we need to remove isms. I don't care if it's male or female. Sexism, racism, classism, you know, all of those things, they're getting in the way. Millennials are not having that conversation. You know, they don't care about that. They don't even want to be identified as male or female. They're non-binary now. You know, the world has really changed.
Well, I think I'd like to see the world where we're just people. We are human beings.
But you know what? I like us to be just people. But me, as a Black American woman, I also want to be recognized for my uniqueness. I don't want to just be lumped together. I want to, you know, I want to be able to have ebbs and flows and to be able to acknowledge people where they are and whatever gifts they bring. You also talked about needs and wants. The needs and wants after this pandemic have changed considerably. And everyone is out here jockeying for position and they're using the same techniques that they did in 2019. It's a whole new world. Newsflash, brains. Everything is different now. And so you have to pay attention and have to talk to your customer and say, hey, what are your needs based upon you have to have an online presence. Now you have employees that are working from home. Now you have a different HR structure. How are you going to reward and recognize individual contributors to an organization? Now they're off-site and you're doing things via Zoom. So all of those things are very important. Wouldn't you agree?
Definitely, definitely. One of the things that I'm working on at the moment is a book on what does virtual innovation management look like, because most of the teams now are virtual teams or hybrid teams. And luckily enough, when I was working at the University of Southern Queensland, so we were working predominantly using Zoom for many, many years and using a lot of hybrid teams. So it's a space that I'm used to working with teams right across the globe and working with a lot of teams now and helping leaders to find ways that they can actually, and activities to do so they can actually help their teams with their mental wellness, check in with their teams. So I think there's a lot more with the pandemic, there's a lot more emphasis on checking in with each of our team members and doing that at the beginning of each meeting. I think that's now become really important.
And keeping them motivated. Now. Yeah, keeping them motivated and excited virtually. You know, what are you doing? You know, are you a little kumbaya song or something before and after the meeting? What are they doing to keep them excited? Because, you know, it can be boring. Everybody looks good from the waist up, and then you got on your shorts and your Birkenstocks from the waist down. People can tell your energy. You know, you still have to get up, brains. You still got to get a shower, you know, get yourself together, get your hair cut, because you still have to be engaged. And now more so than ever, because your reach has expanded tenfold.
Very much so. And I think, so what we're doing is we've got a lot of activities now that we're helping leaders undertake with their teams. We're doing it so they're very simple activities. And what our leaders are telling us that they're really looking for things that work with either Google or Microsoft, so they don't have to go and buy another platform. They don't have to buy another tool. They don't have to buy an app because they're sick of doing that. And so what we've done is we've integrated a lot of these tools, utilizing things like Google Jamboard and Microsoft Whiteboard, and we're helping them to utilize them on Zoom or whatever the platform that they are using so they can work with their teams. And we're getting a lot of really great feedback on that, because they're very simple tools that can be really effective at motivating, energizing the team. But I think the main focus is on, if we can get our teams to be really happy, genuinely happy, then they actually work faster. They're excited. And some of that is about getting some buy-in on what the vision is, getting some buy-in on where we're going, so that they actually really are excited about working towards getting there.
Well, I have some great guests that have just been on my show that talk about gaming, innovation, and online courses. You know, you pause and you play a little game or something, it keeps you excited. It keeps you motivated. You know, you used to be in the room. The energy in the room will never change. You know, when you have a crowd of 10, 15, whatever, and you're feeding off of each other, that's one thing. But to give someone an activity and to reward them, or, you know, again, that game element. So that's a part of your design thinking. And I think that's very, very important. Now, leading growth. People want to grow so fast. And we just talked about that a few minutes ago. Instead of, they want to scale up, they want to ramp up. Instead of just leveling out, and sometimes you have to take a step back, review where you were, what was happening, what your successes were, what your challenges were. You know, some of those things you might want to still implement. How are you helping people in that leading growth perspective with their companies?
Yeah, so what you were talking about just then about checking in, that was what we call a retrospective. So whenever whether people are just doing them in sprints, so you might have a particular, sometimes people have a huge, like if we're talking about traveling towards 2030 or 2050, we're going to have to step back. What does that look like? And what are the tasks that we need to do to get there? And then we set up little small sprints, because it can be so incredibly daunting if we're heading towards 2050 when we're still not sure how we're getting it out of 2021. So to do that, we have to take short steps. And part of that process is, as we go through each of the sprints, what we'll do is we'll do a retrospective and we'll get people to look at what are the things that we're not going to do again and what are the things that we're going to take out, what are the learnings that we're taking from this and we're taking into the next challenge. And people, I think, like the idea of seeing sprints as challenges, because it energizes them and it realizes them, yeah, it's tough, because part of growing is getting out of your comfort zone. It's right. Getting to where it feels uncomfortable.
Absolutely. And also, let's talk about the overachiever syndrome. Folks are burnt out, Dr. Miller. They're tired. Me and my husband yesterday, he said, baby, let's go do something. What did he do? He took me to the mall. What did I do? Overspend on something I can't. I'm not going anywhere. And then I came home and I wasn't happy. You know, I wasn't happy. So we're talking about super brains, people that are founders of organizations, up and coming businesses, innovators. They're super heady, super smart, but they're burnt out. They're tired. What do you say to those individuals?
And that's exactly right. And I think that's why we need to check in, because checking in isn't just about getting the answer, you're okay. Checking in is generally checking in with how people are feeling and what they're feeling. And it's acknowledging that you're not okay every day. And it's about having those authentic conversations. And I think one of the positive things about the pandemic is that we're recognizing mental health a lot more. We're recognizing that it's okay to have checking processes as part of a normal meeting protocol, to check in then how energized we need to make a meeting, because sometimes we can over-energize a meeting and it's not good for the people that we're energizing with.
I'm laughing. I'm thinking about, you know, a kindergarten class when the class is overstimulated. You know, you've given them too much sugar. So yeah, I get it. You can overdo it, you know, and you can underdo it too if you don't check in. And that's what I think that is, you know, at the forefront, is really kind of seeing how these people are. You can see their body language or, you know, their demeanor in the work environment when you're in the office, but you can't really tell that on a 45-minute hour Zoom call. So let me ask you something.
There are techniques in order to do that, and that's what we teach people. So we try and really focus on helping people to do no more than 30 minutes in a meeting. We really focus on and having a structured meeting so that you get a lot of the outcomes that you're looking for, and talking about what needs to happen before and after a meeting and what is the actual purpose of the meeting. Because I found, to be honest, in corporate world, there are so many meetings that people don't really know why they're having meetings. And then when you ask them, what did you do today? And it's meetings.
I laugh on that because I tell people all the time, you know, it's a difference if you're an impactor and you're making a difference. Yeah. Or are you just meeting on the meeting to see what we're meeting about?
Yeah. And I know when I introduced this to a team who were so used to having 2-hourly meetings, and I said, no, instead what we're going to do is we're going to have 2 30-minute meetings a week. And we're going to have them, this is going to be the target for one, this will be the target for the other. We're not doing the 2-hour meetings anymore. And it really took them a long time to get the headspace around this, because they realized that they so went into, you know, the 2 hours of the meeting was taken up with a lot of small talk, with a lot of, what did you do? What are you doing? I don't know. What should we do? I don't know. Whereas what we do is we help people have a really structured approach that encourages creativity. It encourages people's unique talents to shine, and so that we can actually have purposeful meetings in shorter amounts of time, and so that we can just get on with the job that we're meant to be doing. And once people get their head around it, It actually does make a huge difference. And you actually find the teams getting stronger. They're having less time together, but they're actually strengthening their bonds.
Well, and you know, time is something that you're not going to get any more of. You're going to get more money. You're going to get more shoes. You're going to get, you know, another steak dinner. But time, and it really is an illusion. And you have to value that. And you have to respect people's time. You know, I love it. A 30-minute meeting, and it's effective. Now I know and go and do what I have to do. Come back, have some action items, come back with some results. All of that time management is very, very important, but it also frees up a lot of time for you to get some exercise, for you to get up, go for a walk, for you to engage with your family and your children. So that time management piece is huge. It is huge. Well,
you can have a meeting while walking. So you can have walking meetings. You can do that. You can also have exercise group activities as a team together, where, you know, like when I was in Shanghai, a lot of the corporations there, they all exercise together, but you'd see them on the top floor, and that it'd be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Everybody knows they get up there in their gym gear and it's exercise time. So I think it's about finding a way to treat, I guess with design thinking, it's very much a human-centered approach to business. So it's treating people as human beings and understanding a holistic approach, that how do we get energized? How do we, you know, incorporate like things like good food? How do we incorporate exercise? How do we incorporate effective use of our time? How do we be more purposeful? How do we have authentic conversations where we really connect with other human beings, and we have these conversations that are beyond the surface level, so that you don't get these passive aggressives out there that all of a sudden will sit there and explode, and you're like, what is going on?
Right. And also bringing back kindness in the workplace.
Yeah, very much so. Like,
kindness is huge now. It's,
yeah.
You know, and valuing people, and, you know, getting to know your coworker, caring about them a little bit, getting rid of this bullying. Nobody has time for that. And now with this virtual environment, a lot of that bullying is going to be extracted, because they're not going to be in your face, but twice a week for 30 minutes, you know, outside of that. So I want to ask you some fun questions about you, but go ahead. I'm sorry. Your last thought. Go ahead.
I was going to say that comes back to the empathy that comes to the table, and it's about caring genuinely about enough person to ask them questions. Too often we tell people, we don't genuinely ask whether they're okay or not.
Kindness in the workplace, like you said, empathy, that is paramount. Now, you're only going to be with people now twice a week, as you said, 30 minutes for a very interactive, thought-producing meeting. So what's your thoughts on that?
So we have to have more empathy in the workplace. We need to ask each other questions. We need to ask if we're okay. We need to be ready when somebody says, no, I'm not okay. And we need to understand the context. We also need to be aware when somebody does make a decision that may not be the best, that we want to understand the context and the rationale behind the decision they made. Something might be going on at home. So it's really important that we're kind to each other, because we don't know what people are going through.
Right.
Some people are willing to share. Not everyone feels comfortable about sharing. So, and it's unnecessary, I think, to be unkind. I think it's really about, let's practice being kind to each other a lot more. And when I say kindness, I don't mean that passive aggressive type stuff where people pretend to be something and then are really seething underneath. And there's a lot of that, unfortunately, in the corporate work environment. I mean genuine kindness, and I mean genuine understanding. And I mean asking questions about people, because you're actually curious to learn more about them.
Okay, so let me put you to the test. What is the last kind thing? thing that you did for one of your co-workers?
It was probably on the weekend. Somebody wasn't having a great week, and we sort of spoke about that. And then I could see that that person was really sad. And so I just gave them a hug. And that person just really needed a hug because it was something they were going through personally. It was something I didn't know fully and they weren't prepared to share, which is fine. And I didn't fully understand what they were going, but they, I could see they just needed that human touch. They just needed a hug. And I said, do you mind if I hug you? And the person said, that would be great. And I gave that person probably about three big hugs help that person feel, you know, a little bit better, you know, in that day.
The last thing I did was I sent a muffin basket.
Oh, wow. I love it.
I sent a muffin basket because you know what? She said that she was on a diet and she was cranky. So I said, well, here's some vegan muffins. So we had a good time. What are three things, Dr. Karen Miller, that you absolutely cannot live without?
Three things that I can't live without: coffee would have to be number one on the list.
How do you drink your coffee? Do you drink it with cream, sugar, latte?
Sugar. I don't like sugar. Never have.
Ooh.
So no. I have a coffee machine at home. And so I make myself a skinny cappuccino every morning without the chocolate sprinkles on top. So some would argue that's a latte. but I like lots and lots and lots of froth.
Okay.
So I would argue it's a skinny cappuccino without the chocolate on top.
Do you have that fancy French press one? Or do you have a Keurig like me that you just put the cake up in and go on about your business?
I have like one of those like little pods. So you pop the pod in and it does it. And then you actually then steam the milk, and froth the milk. So that's what I have. I've had one of the, I also have a French press at home as well.
I know you seem very classy. You seem like a woman that would have a French press.
I love my coffee, and that's kind of number one I couldn't go without.
Okay.
Number two would probably be broccoli. I love broccoli.
Broccoli? What's that?
It's a vegetable.
Broccoli or broccoli?
Broccoli.
Okay. I was like, is that a new vegetable? What is that? Broccoli. Okay.
No, not broccoli.
Okay, yeah, so how do you eat your broccoli? Do you steam it? Do you roast it? Do you put it? Do you eat it raw? How do you like your broccoli?
I like it raw. I also like it lightly steamed. Mm-hmm. So I like it so it's still got the crunch factor. Mm-hmm. And I really like broccoli with pretty much anything, but probably steak is one of my favorites. But yeah, I love broccoli. So it just, I don't know, I can feel the difference in my body that if I've had two or three days and I haven't had any broccoli. So I do eat other vegetables, but broccoli is my favorite.
Well, I can tell when I do too, because it gives me a little bit of bloat, you know. but it's good for your digestive system. You can't go wrong with broccoli. And what's your third thing?
Third thing, God, that's tough. I probably flowers. Mm. I love flowers.
I do.
Yep. Too. I love having flowers around me. It just makes my heart sing. It makes me feel happy. So that if I'm having like a bit of a down day, which we all do, I go out for a walk in the sunshine and I see flowers and I just can't help but smile. It doesn't matter what kind of day I'm having, it's flowers.
It is. What would you tell a 25-year-old Karen Miller that is about to start her very first business? What would you say to her?
Wow. My first business was actually when I was 15. 25-year-old Karen, I would just say, just go for it. In some ways, probably the 25-year-old Karen had probably more get up and go and was more was probably in some ways stronger than, you know, the 50-something-year-old Karen now. But I think I would tell her not to worry so much. To when you encounter the bullies, which we all do, just to not take it on board. So when people say negative things about you, which they do, you just don't take it on board, and to just, you know, that's their opinion, and not to worry about what people think about you. Focus on helping.
I tell that 25-year-old Karen to fight. I would tell her, to be that risk taker and to fight the fight, you know, and meet the bully right where they are. You don't have to be physically combative, but strategically combative.
I think it's about standing up.
Yeah, look for opportunities, because you know what? The bully eventually leaves. I've had so many, you know, bosses that have come and go because that is who they are. But hurt people hurt people. And if they are not willing to, if they're not willing to come out of their shell and do all of that, but stand up for yourself. Do not let people push you around and, you know, punk you up. Stand for who you are. And women, ask for what you for what you're worth, your value. Outline, you know, this is my skill set. This is what I do. This is what I've brought to the table. It's like when you go for a raise at a job. You can't just walk in there and say, oh, you know, I had a friend that told me. She had me cracking up last night. She says, oh, my employee is making $60,000, and she asked me for $100,000. She says, I'm not paying $100,000 for you to clerk. You have to tell me what you I'm going to get. What is my ROI for giving you an additional $40,000? Same thing. When you go in for a raise and you go in, that is a negotiation. And you have to outline what you have contributed to the company, what your future goals are, what your numbers are, what are people saying, accolades, your teams, what you've been involved in, how you've helped grow the business. You got to have all of that. And then you can justify getting whatever range that she's going to give, because I know my girlfriend is not going to give her $40,000. Now, she might give a 10 or 15, but to get that 40, I don't think so.
I think it's about knowing your own value. So, you know, if somebody said, hey, I want to earn $40,000 more, I'd say, well, what are you going to bring to the table? What are you going to lift so that you are worth $40,000 more? So how are you going to make that happen? Right. And give them a goal. Right. So if that's what they're striving to achieve, work out a way or negotiate a way that can be attainable. So it might mean that if they want to earn an extra $40,000, that they might have to bring another $400,000 worth of sales to the table make that happen. I don't know what the process is, but I think it, to me, everything's negotiation. And, you know, it's about bringing to the table and being accountable. You know, you've got to be accountable, and so many people are shy of accountability.
You've got to have receipts for what you've done and what you're doing, you know, because you can't just, that talk is cheap. It's really cheap, and it will come out in the wash because people are looking, and like she said, you know, $40,000, you're going to bring in $400,000 because I've got to be able to justify what I'm doing, and I've got to see that you are, you know, you're worth that amount of money. And Dr. Karen Miller, you are worth every cent. I have enjoyed talking to you so much. Tell us a little bit about how to get in contact with you, and also about Founders Institute, because, you know, we didn't get to talk too much about them, but how to get in contact with you, work with you, do some deep diving, because you are really on the cutting edge. That's what we do here, brains. We're on the edge. On the cutting edge of what's going on right now when it comes to innovation management.
Okay, great. So innovation management, or growing a business, or even doing deep dives. Well, so we teach people how to do deep dives as well, is another thing that we're bringing to the table. You can contact me through Leading Growth. So that's Karen, K-A-R-E-N dot Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, at Leading Growth, LeadingGrowth.com. So it's Karen.Miller@LeadingGrowth.com is how you can email me. You can jump on the website, put in a request, and ask for whatever it is that you're looking for. We do tailor-made programs for corporations or for teams or for even for single executives. So I've done a couple of tailor-made programs to teach a couple of executives how to do parts of innovation management. For example, people that have had skill sets in most of the areas, but their strength doesn't lie in a couple of little areas. So they really wanted to close up those gaps. So we do that as well, and we can deep dive on those for them as well. So at leadinggrowth.com, just jump on our website. We can help you out there, ask any questions, or you can have a look at our, in the what I call them, one of our box, in the box programs, which are a tailor, which are not necessarily tailor-made, but they're out of the box, or you can actually have a program developed to suit yourself. Regarding our Founder Institute, we're opening up our spring season for the Founder Institute, opens in a couple of weeks. And whilst we're leading in here from Adelaide, people can be located right across the globe because it's completely online and we can still talk to people online. So anybody that has an idea and they think that it's got some legs, they want to take that idea and they really want to try and kill it, because essentially with the Founders Institute, we take them through a structured 13-week program. We try to get people to explore their idea, to get feedback from customers and to look at the actual market, because unfortunately not enough people do that. And then we get them to try and kill the idea. And if the idea succeeds, it's got legs, then it's likely to go. So it's then likely to go to a pre-seed stage, and then they can pitch for funding. And we help them through that 13 weeks. Everybody pitches every single week during that process. So they have plenty of pitching practice. So when they're ready to go for funding and have and do the ask, they've actually got a lot of pitching practice under their belt.
Again, venture capitalists are out there, brains. Don't think because there's a pandemic. That doesn't have anything to do with money, innovation, opportunity, growth, and development. Thank you so much for being here on the edge with me and my brains. Karen Miller, you are the absolute best. Smart, heady woman. And she's supporting smart, heady men. Come back and visit me anytime. You're always welcome.
Thank you, April. It's been a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. All right, brains, you got homework. Get busy. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.